Why do you do what you do? Now, we all have different answers to that. You think you know why you do what you do? Maybe you do. Or maybe you don't care. You just do what you do because that's what you've always done, or that's what we've always done, or something like that. Those of you that know me know that I'm not like that. I cannot, because of whatever compulsions I have, I cannot turn on a light switch and see a light go on without wondering what is going on in that light that's making it brighter than it was before. I have to know things from first principles. So that applies to lots of parts of my life, and it gets me in trouble sometimes, and it makes me get bogged down from time to time. I'm going to turn to a scripture. You probably turned there on Thursday, so you don't need to go there. It's Leviticus 23 and verse 23. And to lead into this sermon and ask a question. And I brought my glasses up because my NAS is very small print. But I can read it, I think. Again, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, and in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a rest, a reminder by blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. You shall not do any laborious work, but you shall present an offering by fire to the Lord." All right, so most of us in this room were able to do that, not the offering, but we were able to meet on that particular day. And my question is, when did you do that? Well, most of us, I think, did it on Thursday. Why did you do it on Thursday? How do you know? You know, if we read down a little bit further, we have another observance that Jim mentioned is going to be next Saturday in verse 26. And now I'm reading from the New American Standard. It has worded slightly differently. But notice it says in verse 26, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, on exactly the 10th day of the 7th month is the Day of Atonement. Exactly, not just on that day, but exactly the... It's stressed. So I assume that most of us will be keeping, or all of us will be keeping, atonement on exactly the 10th day of the 7th month. When is that? And how do you know? Maybe you don't care. That's fine. But I'll try to make this sermon interesting, even if you don't care a whole lot of how we come up with that. But today, what I'm going to do is look at how calendars work in general. We'll review the differences between the Holy Day calendar that we've all been familiar with, and the civil calendar. You may think that's a very basic thing to consider, maybe elementary to you, but I know when I went to Thailand, that was a bigger deal, and I talked to a gentleman who was here in America. I was going to tell you his name, and it just slipped my mind, but down in North Carolina, he said, you know, when I want to talk to my Korean friends about the holy days, and he drew me a picture. He said, he drew a calendar. He said, well, the calendar has, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He said, well, you know, when my countrymen see this, and they say, well, on the first day of the 7th month, and it's the 5th day of the 4th month, they don't understand that. And I've taken that for granted because I grew up in a church environment that understood the holy days. He said, what would help us is if you would make a calendar for us that we can see that the 4th is actually the 20th or 21st of another month and the 20th and so on. If you would do that. And I know there are calendars that exist. I've talked to Mike about that. We take some of those things for granted. Today I'm going to cover some of the details there, I hope an interesting way, so that you can see where this comes from. And maybe some specific things about what we call in modern days the Hebrew calendar. And we're going to answer two questions today. And these are the questions that actually are the title of the sermon. And I apologize to the classic group Chicago, because the title of the sermon is, does anybody really know what time it is? And does anybody really care? Now, what we're going to do, or we're going to try to do, is we're going to get some lights out here. And anybody who's young enough to want to play with some balls and some lights, you can come on up, maybe bring a few chairs, and we're going to set something up and try to do a little bit of astronomy here. Anybody going to come up and help me? Might want to bring a couple chairs up or drag them from where nobody's sitting there. Because you might be here a while, you might get tired of standing around. Go grab a couple chairs. I don't know how many we're going to need. All right. I should have brought enough balls for all the planets. I didn't realize how many young people we're going to have today. All right, anywhere in front here, this is good. Somewhere in the middle here, who wants to be Atlas? Who wants to hold up the Earth? Destiny wants to hold up the Earth. We need a couple people, actually. But you can, a couple, three of you can be right in the middle here. And this will be the Earth. Did you know what color the Earth is? It's mostly blue. Why? Mostly water. But there is, I'm a terrible artist, I'm sorry. But I tried to draw some continents on here. You know, anybody, what's that one there? Anybody recognize? I don't know, I'm terrible. But Africa. Oh, good guess. How about here? How about that one?
America.
That's where we live. That's in North America. South America. How about the one on the bottom?
I did not put.
Not on the bottom. The North Pole's up here. Which one's on the bottom?
South Pole.
South Pole, yeah. And what's the name of that continent? Where the penguins and some scientists live. That's supposed to be the Earth. And it's mostly water, though. I put two dots for the poles, so the Earth will spin like that, right? So who wants to... Atlas is here in the middle. You've got to get in the middle here. Come on. You can take turns holding it. Oh, well, you can't get there because you're... You know what that is over there?
Okay.
The big yellow one is the sun. That's going to be the sun. Okay?
Yeah.
All right, so... Andrew, you want to say something? No. Go ahead and just have a seat and hold... You have to hold it for a long time. Now... What does the Earth do?
Orbit.
It orbits around
the sun.
The sun. So one thing it does this, right? You know, all the way around the sun. Except the sun is a lot further away than that. In fact, I need to explain something here. This is not to scale. Not to scale at all. Meaning, if the Earth was this big, the sun could not be that close, or what would happen? We'd all burn up. In fact, now I did some calculations on my... If the Earth is only, let's say this is about 2 feet. Is that close? Yeah.
Okay.
It's not quite 2 feet. If the Earth was a ball that's 2 feet, whoops, I'm sorry, turn it upside down. That's only 2 feet, then the sun, do we have any buildings in Harrisburg that are 200 feet high? 20 stories? What's the biggest one in Harrisburg? How far away is Harrisburg's crow fly? 4 miles? 5 miles? Downtown? Okay, picture this. Picture the biggest building in Harrisburg. And picture it sitting right where it sits. If this was really the Earth, the sun would be like a big building in Harrisburg, that far away. Okay? To get your scale. And if this were the moon, it would have to be, actually it's only a little bit too big, but it would have to be 64 feet away. It would have to be about 3 rooms down there somewhere, that far away. But today we're going to put it close to the Earth so we can see how the Earth and the Moon work. But just understand that in the real world, the Sun is very, very far away. How far away from the Earth? Anybody know?
A couple thousand miles.
More than a couple thousand.
93 million miles.
You got it. 93 million miles. That's a long way. You wouldn't want to walk it. Maybe hitchhike. No, it's just too far. 93 million miles away. Okay. Now, this is going to take a while, so I hope you all are patient. And if you get tired of holding that, you can give it to your sister. I forgot. She's this Destiny. What's your name? Skylar. You can give it to Skylar or give it to your brother or give it to somebody else in there. And we have other things we're going to hold to. All right. Let's see. Not to scale. By the way, you know how your Earth is even kind of a small planet in the solar system, right? What's the biggest planet in the solar system?
Jupiter.
And if Jupiter is this big, how big would the Earth be? Be a lot like this, right? Little thing. What's big? What in the solar system is bigger than Jupiter?
The sun.
The sun. And if the sun was this big, how big would Jupiter be? About that big. Are there stars bigger than the sun?
No.
Oh, yes, there are. There's some big ones. Like maybe Arcturus. If Arcturus was this star, the sun would be only that big. And there's bigger stars than Arcturus, like Betelgeuse, and like, what's the other one that's huge? Antares, which if Arcturus was this one, Antares would be this one. In other words, the Earth is very, very small compared to all these other things in the solar system and in the universe. Okay. Let's see. What does the Earth do? Can you demonstrate to us? Let's see. We've got to put north on. What is it that the Earth does besides going around the sun? What else does it do? Oh, it's a little bit on an angle. Okay. So it rotates. All right. What happens when it rotates? One side faces what? The sun. What's the other side face?
Night.
Night over here, day over here. All right. And it's spinning all the time. Actually, it's spinning this way. Yeah. If it's going around the Earth, I'll bring it back. If it's going around this way, it would be spinning and rotating at the same time. Revolving around the Earth and spinning on its axis at the same time. And day and night, day and night, day and night. How long does it take for the... All right, let's say... I was going to give you a little dot. So you know what? Actually, you could put your... Put your name on a dot. Those of you that are just... I'll give you a pen. You can put your name on one of these dots and you can pick a place on the Earth to put yourself. You can stick it on there anywhere. Pick a country, pick a continent. How long does it take for the Earth to go all the way around? One day. So, to go all the way around one time, 24 hours. And if you're on the Earth, we don't have anybody on the Earth yet, but we'll put somebody on the Earth. You got Antarctica up in the top, you can't do that. Actually, in the universe, it wouldn't make any difference. But I'm used to looking at maps, so we're going to put North at the top. But there's no top and bottom. Well, that's okay. You don't spin that way. But there's no really top or bottom in the universe. So it doesn't matter. But just to help us know where England is and Africa and so on, we'll put it this way. Anybody know what this island is here? In the Atlantic? It's Greenland up there. Okay. So it takes 24 hours. And if you're on a particular place on the Earth... Oh, yes, please.
Can I draw my name on the table?
Yes, sir. When you push your name, did you put your name? Yeah, go ahead and take your sticker and stick it on yours somewhere before you get it there. So write your name on one, and you can pick a place on Earth to put yourself. Whatever you think's interesting to you. And you'll have to think about that, I'm sure. Okay. So the Earth is rotating. It looks like what? Looks like, what does the sun move a lot compared to the Earth? It kind of really stays in the same place. But what's it look like? It looks like the sun's coming up in the morning and going down in the evening. Why does it look like that? Well,
because the Earth is spinning.
Right, because here's Katie, she's in Australia, okay? And she's over here in the dark. And as the Earth spins, where is she now?
And what?
And what time of day is it? When it just starts to get light. When she just starts facing the sun, it's morning time. And it looks like, oh, the sun is getting higher in the sky. And then by the time Katie gets over here, it looks like the sun's about ready to disappear and it'd be nighttime. Go ahead, dude.
Not to be picky, but you're making the sun rise on the west.
Oh, got to turn this way. Thank you. I can do this and turn it that way. You want to put it where you live? Well, you live pretty close to right there.
Okay, I'm going to be.
Oh, you're going to be right on. You're going to be at the beach. That's good.
All right. I'm going
to
be swimming.
Okay, that's good. Leah's going to be swimming. Thank you. All right, I was spinning it the wrong way. Because it does come up. The sun comes up, obviously, in the east. All right. A few other basics. How long does it take this thing, the Earth, to go all the way around the the sun and come back to this spot. How long does that take?
24 hours.
Oh, no. That's how long it takes the Earth to spin around once. How long does it take for it to go all the way around the sun and come back here?
A year.
A year. A year. And how long is a year? A year is a year. How else can we? How many days is a year? 365. Kind of. But not exactly. It's 365 and a quarter or something. 5 hours and 30, I forget. So many minutes. I wrote it down. 365 days, 5 hours, 49 minutes, and 12 seconds on average. So it's not exactly anything. It's exactly that. All right. Well, I just don't want to skip anything here. If I miss something, somebody, I asked you to correct me, and Justin can correct me. Whoever knows some of these things. How many months in a year?
12.
In the calendar that we use. 12 months. Okay. Now, how many days in 12 months? Well, not 365 and a quarter. Because we don't have a quarter day in any month, do we? A part of a day. So what happens, we have these months in our calendar, and we have a year that's 365 and a quarter days long. We can't change that because it takes so long for the Earth to come back around. What do we have to do to fix the calendar every once in a while so that the months and the years work out together? Anybody know that? What do we do with different with the calendar some years that we don't do in other years? Anybody know? Nobody knows. How many days in February?
Sometimes you come back in, like 28 days.
28 days, sometimes.
29.
Why does it change?
Because there's 29 days in a month.
It changes because you've got this quarter day messing things up. So every 4 years, this isn't exactly true, every 4 years we add a day to the year, so that the months and the years stay organized. Except, who knows, except when?
Every 100 years.
Except every 400. Every 100 except every 400. And even at that, according to one thing I read, how long would it go until we're a day out, even following that pattern? Some people say that 8,000 years will be a day off. But somebody else argues with that because of precession or something or else that I don't understand. Yes?
Hawaii.
Oh, you want to be in Hawaii. Well, I don't blame you. You'd be in the Pacific, right? No, that's the Atlantic. That's the Atlantic Ocean. We want to go in the big blue one. There's a few dots there. That was for Guam and Solomon Islands and Hawaii, so you can just pick one. Any one of those islands will work. Justin's done. He wants to be in Hawaii. You want to be in that one? You're going to be swimming. Surfing, maybe. Okay. Everybody got a place on the earth there? So, I know I'm covering this as very basic for many of you. The problem, one of the problems is, oh, sorry, Leah, go ahead.
How long?
6 days, I didn't know that. Light's pretty fast, too. 6 hours, oh, okay. That makes sense. It's only 8 minutes to get to the Earth. I don't know how long its year is. Okay. Oh, thank you. All right. So y'all got a spot on the Earth. And so the Earth is spinning around. And we have for the rest of you here, we have an issue with the calendar. And that is that days and months and years and all they don't add up right. So we have leap years and we have leap seconds. And we have all kinds of things. No, I didn't know that. It's a long time. It's way out there. They don't even call it a planet anymore. What's the name of our calendar? Gregorian calendar, right? Pope Gregory the 13th, somewhere around 1582. That calendar was was a revision to the Julian calendar. The problem with the Julian calendar is that it figured a 365 and a quarter day year didn't work. You know, because of the 365 and a quarter day year, it had gotten off, and by the time Pope Gregory's time, it was about 10 days off. So you end up with the seasons being a little messed up, and we'll see that. Now, in Genesis chapter 1, hold on a second. I want to read scripture here, and then we'll come back. In Genesis chapter 1, I need you to stay up here until we get the moon out. We're not ready for the moon quite yet. But you don't have to turn here again. You're familiar with the scriptures. In Genesis 1, on the fourth day, it talks about God organizing the heavens. And I'm going to read verses 14 through 19, if I can see it here. God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the expanse of the heaven to give light on the earth," and so forth. And God made two of them that were greater, the sun and the moon, and I won't go into more detail. That word for seasons, you know that from keeping the holy days. It's the same word. It's a moed, which is it indicates to me, anyway, that God organized the heavens in such a way that we would be able to keep track of the seasons so we know when the holy days were, and that was important to God. So, that's why they're there. But it's not a real, real simple formula, you might say. So we use a calendar in modern times that's pretty good for keeping time, but even it needs to be adjusted from time to time with leap years, or maybe not leap years sometimes. And so we have to fiddle with the calendar to make it work, even the calendar that we use in America and most of the rest of the world. Now, the question would be, what kind of a calendar did they use in the times when the Bible was written? This is called a solar calendar. Our calendar is figured on how long it takes the earth to go around the sun. Does anybody know what the calendar was that they used back in old days was called and how it was figured? It was figured based on this. Here, want to hold that? That is going to be the moon. Well, you can take turns. It's all good, Justin. Because you're answering the questions. I dropped something there. All right. We're going to call this the moon. Now, some of you think the moon's made of green cheese. Uh-oh, we dropped the moon. The moon is not made of green cheese. It's made of Edam, and that actually is a wax covering. I couldn't get an accurate color on the moon here. So they had a calendar in old days. They had many calendars, I should say. Most of them were based on the moon. Sometimes they'd base it on the reigns of kings, and that's how they count their years. There's all kinds of ways to do it. But the moon does what? Where does it go? Where does it go? Where does the moon go? Around the sun?
I mean, around the earth.
It does go around the sun with the earth. But also, what else does it go around? The earth. Okay, so you got energy to hold the earth up again? All right. And Nathan, you have the moon. So what is the moon doing? Can you get up and do what the moon, hold the moon up and do what the moon does to the, with? There we go. Not quite that close, but that's what it's doing. Actually, you can go ahead and walk around. You can walk around, not you. The earth is going to stay where it is right now. Give him a path through there so he can walk around. Get a little further away. Get further away, and you can actually walk behind me here. Okay? And walk, just do a big circle around the earth there. And yet, that's what the moon does, right? It goes around the earth. I mean, are we going in the wrong direction now if this goes this way? Yeah, you got to go the other way. Because if we're going to spin the earth this way, the moon has to go that way too. Sorry. If we were all on the other side looking the other way, we could have done it the other way. Okay, that's good. So you see what it does. Now, if we just... Oh, go ahead. Justin's going to... Yes, let's say something. I'm sorry. They come back.
They say that it's a dwarf planet.
A dwarf planet, right. Because it doesn't really count as a planet anymore. Justin, you want to hold the moon up here? Now... Let's say the moon, you can go over by your chair. That's good enough. Now hold it in front of you. The moon, and by the way, just to point out one little thing, let me have it for just a second. The moon does not go around the earth in the, hold the earth up. It does not go straight around in the same direction as the sun. It's tilted a little bit. I don't know if I have the right direction, but it's tilted somewhat. And it only crosses this plane twice like this as it goes around. that's the time that the eclipse is going to happen. The other thing I need to, well, I won't point this out yet. If the moon is up here, let's see, who's living here in Asia? Can you read that?
Destiny.
Who?
Me.
You are. Oh, I'm sorry. Destiny is in Asia. So she's right here. And if she looks at the moon up here, you're looking at the moon from the Earth. Is the whole moon lit up or part of the moon? What is it? How much of the moon is lit up by that light, the sun? The whole moon. And what do we call that?
Full moon.
Full moon. Okay? What if the moon was over here right now, and who's that? That's Justin. He's in Hawaii. And it's daytime. Is any of the moon lit up?
Yes, sir.
Maybe just a little tiny bit, but not much. So this is what we call a new moon. Kind of like no moon, because it's all bright on this side, but not this side. How about when it comes around here? Let's see, who's in this color? Leah. Leah's right here. What kind of a moon does she see when she's looking straight at it? What do you see there, Ryan? What part of the moon's lit up?
Half.
Half of it. Okay? I'm being too basic here. So the moon's going around the Earth, and you get these different phases that you can see. In old times, they figured that the beginning of a month was what they called the new moon. And that's, as the moon came around, and it was dark, as it comes around a little more, I'm going the wrong way. As it comes around a little more, you start seeing a little bit of light there. Can you see a little tiny bit of light on the edge there? That's called the new moon. You first start seeing the moon again, and they would start their months.
Can I hit the moon?
Sure. By the way, does the moon spin? Rotate. It does. How fast?
Faster than the Earth.
Nah. You know what it does? As it goes around the Earth, it spins so slowly. I'm spinning it. All right, let's see. Here, here's how you can tell. We got something here. We'll call it the belly button on the moon. It doesn't really have a belly button, we'll call it. Alright? Look, the belly button's facing the Earth.
I know what it can be.
I'm gonna spin it.
I know what that can be.
Now the belly button's facing the back of the room. Now the belly button is facing the sun. Now the belly button's facing this way. Now the belly button's facing this way. So the moon has spun all the way around. And the moon has also gone around the Earth one time. And you know what? What happened? Could be a crater. This belly button crater was facing the Earth all the time. Yes, you may. And if you're on the Earth, can you see this side? No. Because it spins at just the right speed, so the belly button crater is always facing the Earth, and if you're on Earth, you can't see this side. Unless you see one of the pictures from satellite or from the rocket ship that have been up there. Yeah, take it around. That was for you, Bonnie. Some of these things, I don't understand. You get the real truth from Hugh and Justin later. I'm just doing the best I can here.
Do you know how many years it takes for the space to reach Pluto?
Oh, I don't know. Here, if you want to hang on to the moon for a little bit. Okay. No, I don't know. In Exodus 12, we know that God said to the Israelites, and again, you don't need to turn it. He said, this will be the beginning of months. What did he tell them what a month was? No, he just said, this is going to be your first one. And it was springtime. It was springtime. That's Passover comes in the spring. And they were supposed to have certain offerings. They were going to have an offering on the wave sheaf day that required barley to be ripe. So we can't have Passover happen in December, or there won't be any ripe barley. No. Venus was the first one. You have a regular encyclopedia up here. Thank you. So God didn't explain what a month was, but he said, here's your first month. Now, how many have ever seen an old Western movie, you know, where they characterize the American Indians, right? And what do they say when they talk about something be a long time ago? Many moons ago. What does that mean, many moons ago? Many months ago. In English, we have two different words. But in some languages, like Hebrew, Or, like Burmese, when I was over in Asia, I said, I asked them to look it up. I said, we were reading Exodus 12. I said, and they wanted to learn about the calendar a little bit, so we had a day outside class on the calendar. And I said, look up in your Burmese Bibles there. I said, what does it say? What's that word for month? And they said, it's the same word that we use for moon. So God told them, this is the first moon for you. If you're reading it in Burmese, this is your first moon. That's how they figured a month, month and moon. That's what we kind of the same way in English. So, at the risk of being even too complicated, I just want to take a little bit of time to explain one thing about the way the moon and the earth relate to one another. Bear with me. The moon, the earth is spinning, right? And the earth is also coming around the sun. And the moon, I think we're going to take it that way. And the moon is going this way, around the earth. Okay? So you want to start moving the earth. Now, notice what happens. Let's see. All right. Stop. Let's just go back there for a minute, if you don't mind. Okay. You're going to start, you can stand up. You start walking around the earth, okay? And you can walk all the way around and come back. But meanwhile, the earth is doing what? It's moving this way. And it moves a 12th of the way around the sun. So by the time the earth gets here, by the time the moon gets here, it's a certain number of days, I forget, it's 27 something. But it has to come, in order to be back in the same position relative to the earth, it takes another 2 days. She says, come on. Get up, walk. So she has to walk further. So the moon has to go further. All right, that's a little complicated thing there, and I'm probably not explaining it too well. You can sit down again. So do you understand what I'm saying? If the Earth was stayed in the same place, the moon would just go around and what is it? 27? Somebody know? 27 and a third days. It would take 27 and a third days to be right back here. But the Earth has moved relative to the sun. So it takes longer to come to where the earth has moved. So it's following the earth around. But to come into the same orientation with the earth and the sun again, it takes another 2 days. And it takes 29 and a half days. If anybody ever cared about that, now you have the explanation. It takes 29 and a half days to come back. Only 27 and a third to go all the way around. But the earth has moved. And the moon's moving with it. But it takes longer to come around to the same position. 29 and a half days. A month is 29 and a half days. Pretty close to that. Again, we have a problem. If we do the math, it doesn't work. Trying to figure it out. So we have phases of the moon. I explained them. And now we'll talk a little bit about calendar basics. I'll just point it out now. I was going to point it out later. But 29 and a half days times 12 months is 354 days. Times 13 months is 383. So you can't cut up with 365. And that's... let's say all the months are 30 days, then you can come up with 360 days or 390 days or whatever, but you're still not going to come up with 365 and a quarter. So any system that we use to try to coordinate months with years is going to have some fudge factors in it. It just does because it doesn't all add up. That's my point.
Did you know that Mars has a pink sky?
That what?
Pink
dye or pink guy?
Pink sky.
Oh, pink sky. I've never been on Mars. Have you been there?
No.
Oh.
On the back
of my Facebook, it says Mars has a pink sky. As we've sent spacecraft up there to see. Okay. I'll leave you up here just a little bit longer, answer a few more questions, and then maybe we'll go sit down. In Genesis 1, it says God created the day and night, right? Let there be light, and then we have evening and morning are the first day. So now we know what a day is. That's one of the ways we keep time, right? A day. And what is a day? It's 24 hours, and it's the time it takes for the earth to spin around once. What's a month? Well, roughly, at least it used to be, it's the amount of time it takes for what? The moon to go around the earth. On our modern calendar, that's not true. But that's what they used to do. When a moon went all the way around one time, that's a month. All right? A year is how long it takes for the earth to do what? all the way around the sun. All the way around the sun. So all of those things we know from astronomy, from the sun and the moon and the earth. Now, how about a week? What's a week?
7 days.
A week is 7 days. Well, how do we know that? What's that have to do with the moon or the earth or the sun? Anybody know? Nothing? Does it have to do with anything? How do we come up with a week? Is that in your book? You think about it. Where do we get a week? Anybody know? What book do we have to look at to know what a week is?
Bible.
Right. This book says that God created the heavens and the earth and paper, all those things, in how many days? Well, actually six, and then he rested on the seventh. Right? That's the only place you come up with a week. There's no week in the heavens. There's no week with the sun, other than 7 days. But why isn't it 10 days? Or 11 days? Or 2.5 days? Or something else? God is the one who said the week is 7 days. And we measure that, of course, by the Sabbath. So you got to go to the Bible to understand what a week is, which is amazing proof of the Sabbath. Because why do we have weeks in the 21st century? You can't get it from anywhere else. It comes from the Bible. I don't know of any place else anyway. Yes, Leah. What?
I have two sons that
Tucson?
I could
about. Already? School just started.
You know what's kind of the hardest? Because Mercury is the closest to the sun.
Well, if you're close to the sun, it is very, very hot. You couldn't live there.
Which one? Well, Mercury is closest to the sun, so which one's the hardest? Yeah, the
hardest. Mercury, maybe? Okay. All right. One more, and then you can go and take the chairs back, because I'm done with the... I think I'm done with the moon and sun. I'm sorry. Oh, you can? Yes. Yes, that'd be nice. Okay. Are you going to sing them right now? Why can we wait till later? Because I might take too long in my sermon. They won't like that. You know, one thing about the Earth's moon is very big compared to the Earth. That's very unusual. The Earth's moon is about as big as, could be as big as a planet. Most other moons are very, very much smaller. And God made it that way. And what did God make it? Where he put the moon? Now, can you hold the sun, hold the Earth still just a minute? What happens? Remember I said you can only have, well, I won't say what it is, but because the moon is on an angle to the what's called the equatorial plane. When it comes down to a certain point, just hold it still there. What happens when the moon gets I got a question for you. What happens when the moon gets in between the Earth and the sun? Watch. You guys are on this side. You look. You look at the Atlantic Ocean there. What's happening as the moon comes around here? It gets dark. What's that called? Nope. Nighttime is when you're on the other side from the sun. Why does it get dark when the moon goes in front of the sun? That's called, what's that called? You know? What's it called? If you're on the earth and you look at the sun, and you don't look at the sun, but you look up and you can't see the sun anymore, all you can see is the moon. It's called an eclipse. Eclipse. And what's neat about the moon and the earth and the sun is that when you're on the earth looking at this direction, the moon and the sun look to be the same exact size. The moon covers up the sun all the way, except it's a little tiny bit of flares around the outside. The chances of that happening are not really. God did that so we could have eclipses. There's just no way that would happen otherwise. So that's the last thing I want to say about eclipses. Okay, can you go ahead? Because I got to go finish the rest of the sermon. I'll get in trouble. Huh?
Did you know that Pluto is smaller than the moon?
Uh-huh.
And did Pluto once be a planet?
It wants to be? I didn't know anything. Yeah, well, it used to be a planet. They thought it was. It's too small and it's kind of out of the orbit. Okay, thank you very much. And you guys can go back to your seats. I really appreciate that. I think I'm done demonstrating.
Well, did you know that Pluto sometimes goes into Neptune's orbit?
Yes. Pluto might not get respect in some quarters, but from Justin, Pluto gets a lot of respect. Thank you very much. Okay. Everybody still with me? I think it's amazing. A couple things I think are amazing. And you heard a lot of details from Hugh last week, I heard, and that's really neat. But the fact that there is such a thing as a week is just amazing to me. So we have issues with no matter what calendar we use. We have issues that months don't add up to years and that type of thing. So we have leap days, right? Now, how about a lunar solar calendar, one that matches, that uses real months, like the Hebrew calendar? How do they keep it organized? Well, they don't add a leap, they don't have an extra day in February because their months don't even get that close. Their months are like 11 days off a year or something like that. So they add a leap month. And some people look at the Hebrew calendar and they say, this is just a mess. You know, this is confusing. You add this, you add that. And I've said that to myself in the past. But if you research the calendar that you use, you add stuff too. There is no calendar that you don't have to tweak and adjust because the heavenly bodies don't all mesh in some kind of a smooth mathematical way, at least not one that we figured out. Somebody asked me if I'd mention, I will, that this coordination between the earth and the sun, the moon, and the way the moon revolves around the earth, or rotates around the earth and so forth, that comes back into agreement about every 18 and a half years or something like that. It's called the sol. What? Sorrow cycle, 19-year cycle. There is such a thing as a 19-year cycle, or almost 19, 18-something. So I'm going to talk about the Hebrew calendar a little bit because in the Hebrew calendar, the one that we use to figure when the holy days are, there's a month that's added every once in a while. And there's a formula for that. I won't go into that, but you can. One of the things you can figure out, I think, from the keyboard. He was told me that years ago, and I forgot it, but I learned it again. If you don't adjust the calendar, what happens is the seasons don't match the months. And that's what you know. That's why did the Gregory the 13th have to adjust the Julian calendar? Because Easter was coming too early. It was going to be in winter, and they didn't want that. They wanted it around the spring equinox. Well, in the Hebrew calendar, you got the same issue. You gain 11 days every year. I think it's what you do. It's about 11. So Passover is going to end up keeping Passover in February. But it's obviously a spring holy day. So the calendar gets adjusted by adding an extra month on a regular basis. How was that done in the past? Well, let's go in a little bit of history. This history sometimes is disputed. But there, in the Bible, a day begins when? When does the day start? Sunset. There were other cultures where it began at 12 midnight, 6 in the morning. In the Hebrew culture, it's sunset. That's the way God instructs. The moon or the month was a new moon. We call, if you look on your calendar, it says the new moon was Wednesday morning, I think it was. Astronomically, the new moon means nothing, no moon. But it's generally accepted in that for lunar calendars, new moon meant the first sliver. In other words, the new moon, when you start seeing some light again. And that's by observation. The year, of course, began in the spring. And in a lunar calendar, you have to add months every once in a while in order to keep the first month in the spring and not end up in winter. There are other calendars besides the Hebrew calendar that are lunar calendars. The Buddhists have a lunar calendar for figuring their holy days. So in the Far East, where we're going for the feast, China had a lunar calendar, Korea had one, Japan had one until the 1800s, Vietnam had one, did I say that? Burma had one, and they still use one to a certain extent, although most of the world now follows the same calendar that we do, just to keep things straight. But religiously, many of them still use a lunar calendar. In the Hebrew world, in the Jewish world, you had observation, Somebody would go and they'd say, I saw the first sliver of the new moon. And somebody else would say it. And it would get reported to the Sanhedrin, who was the court, the people that were always chasing Paul around and chasing Jesus around. The people that, like Nicodemus, was on the Sanhedrin, right? That was the ruling council of the Jews. And they would confirm or approve, say, yes, the new moon has been sighted. So that began the month. When would the year start? Well, you had to have barley for that offering in the spring. So they would determine whether or not we had to add a month this year because the barley wasn't going to be ready because we're kind of in early March or something like that, and it's not going to work. So they added a second month. They called it Adar 1, I think. The regular Adar was Adar 2. That doesn't make any sense to me, but that's how they did it. Now, what happened in 70 A.D.? I've spoken about that in some of the sermons. What happened in 70 A.D. in the Jewish world?
Temple destroyed.
All right. What happened in 135 A.D.?
Bar Kokhba Rebellion.
And what did Hadrian do after that?
Disbanded the Sanhedrin.
And what else? I think I got it right. Expelled the Jews from Jerusalem. They couldn't live in Jerusalem any longer. Which is, not that it already hadn't started, but in a big way started what we call the diaspora, right? Jews all over the world, not so much in Jerusalem anymore. Started in 130, they were Jews obviously around in the empire when Paul was preaching, but in a big way in 135, yes?
I don't think I'm correct when I say that he expanded the Sanhedrin, but it may have been.
Well, the historians argue about that. It was disbanded at some point. They moved to wherever the other place is, and there was a certain, there was still certain authority. By the time you get to the 4th century, many of them say, although some people will dispute it, that the Sanhedrin had been abandoned for a while. You had Jews all over the empire. So how are we going to keep the holy days? How are we going to do this in some organized fashion? And, again, people dispute over when this happened and who it happened, but there seems to be quite a bit of agreement that it was Hillel II, sometime in the 4th century, that put together a calculated calendar so that no matter where you were, you'd know when the first day of the 7th month was. And you'd know when the 14th day of the first month was. And you didn't have to go out and look at your own barley, and you didn't have to cite for yourself when the new moon was. Why? Because it gets confusing. You realize that first sliver of moon is visible on one day maybe in Jerusalem, perhaps on another day in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So we wouldn't be keeping the holy days on the same day. You have probably seen this. There are people from kind of our background that are in the Midwest of the United States that do the observed new moon, okay, good enough so far, and they do the observed barley so they know when to start the year. You know where they observe? They observe in Kansas, and maybe all the way up to South Dakota, maybe down to Oklahoma, but they're looking at their neighborhood. And they think that that's the right thing to do. I'm not to judge them. I'm not to put them down, but you realize they're going to come up with a different answer than if we looked at barley here or if somebody looked at barley in the Holy Land, over there in Israel. And you'd have people keeping holy days on all different days. And guess what? We have people keeping holy days on all different days. I got a call from a good friend. Said, you want to come and speak at our feast? It won't be a conflict. We don't keep it at the same time. I haven't decided if I'm going or not yet. But the point is, he's keeping the feast a whole month different. And for a different reason. So, there's all kinds of different ways of doing it. And my point is not to judge. My point is just to explain so that you understand why we do what we do. Because one reason is because there has to be some authority. Somebody has to say, oh, this is when we're going to do it and how we're going to do it. Otherwise, everybody's doing their own thing and you wouldn't have anybody to keep the holy day with. So, to me, that's of some importance. We base, the calendar that we use is based on sunset being the beginning of the day, based on a new moon, but now it's calculated, and Passover being in the spring. But it's been calculated in order to eliminate the need for observation because there's no Sanhedrin now to approve the observations and confirm them, and observations would differ all over the earth. I mean, if you wanted to take it to the extreme, if you lived in Australia, who lived in Australia here?
Katie.
All right, Katie's in Australia. When's her barley going to get ripe? November, December, January? I don't know. So, down there, if our friends in Kansas use the same logic. They'll be keeping the spring holidays in the spring in the southern hemisphere, which would be our fall and winter. Am I judging them? I'm not, but I don't think that that's, it just doesn't seem to me to what God intended, that we'd be doing 50 different things. It's good to have some authority and choose the same days. And a compromise is made in that the people in the southern hemisphere are keeping Passover in the fall. So they keep it at the same time as those majority of humanity that live in the northern hemisphere and Jerusalem in the northern hemisphere. That's the way the Bible was written, because it was written from a northern hemisphere perspective, because that's where the writers of the Bible were. So I don't have any problem with that, and I hope you don't either. I just wanted to give you an explanation of where it came from. Now, you know, what purpose would be served if everybody kept holidays on totally different times and you couldn't even meet together? That wouldn't serve any purpose. Now, there's an obvious question, and you could maybe make a lot of questions, but I'll just ask one. Doesn't God make time holy? Okay, I'm not going to argue that one way or the other. But I hope, with the young people here, I've demonstrated that God has left it up to us how to calculate some of that time. Does anybody know what time it is? Well, yeah, we do, but we do because we've agreed on a system of figuring it out. As Hugh has said before, he said he looked at all the scriptures in the Bible on the calendar. It takes how long?
15 seconds.
Yeah. There's nothing. It doesn't explain it. This is your first month. Day starts at sunset. Pretty much it. The rest of it we've got to figure out for ourselves, or trust those that have already figured it out. You know, we can argue about what's a new moon. We can argue about how to add to the calendar in order to keep Passover in the spring. There's more than one way of doing that. We could argue on whether we should have a different whole set of holidays for the southern hemisphere. It could just be a mess, and it is. The important thing, I think, to God is that we put Him first and do as He commands. And in areas that He hasn't commanded, we don't need to judge one another. And we come to a consensus on the holy days and on the calendar, and it works. Now, if you'll bear with me, I'd like to read something, not my own talk here, but something called Jufac, which has a nice synopsis of the calendar. So if you missed anything, maybe it'll be here. The Jewish calendar is based on three astronomical phenomena: the rotation of the earth about its axis, which is a day, the revolution of the moon around the earth, which is a month, and the revolution of the earth around the sun, a year. Those three phenomena are independent of each other, so there is no direct correlation between them. I'm saying that's what gives us a problem. On average, the moon revolves around the earth in 29 and a half days. The earth revolves around the sun in 365 and a quarter days, and that's about 12.4 lunar months. The Gregorian calendar, used by most of the world, has abandoned any correlation between the moon cycles and the month, arbitrarily setting the length of months at 28, 30, or 31 days, or 29 sometimes. The Jewish calendar, however, coordinates all three of these astronomical phenomena. Months are either 29 or 30 days, corresponding to the 29 and a half day lunar cycle. Years are either 12 or 13 months to make it work out that they're actually 12.4. The lunar month on the Jewish calendar begins when the first sliver of moon becomes visible after the dark of the moon. That's how it was in ancient times. In ancient times, the new months used to be determined by observation. When people observed the new moon, they would notify the Sanhedrin. When the Sanhedrin heard testimony from two independent, reliable witnesses that the new moon had occurred on a certain date, they would declare the Rosh Chodesh, which means the first of the month, and send out messengers to tell the people when the month began. Obviously, I'm talking now. Obviously, that becomes a problematic in the diaspora when you've got Jews all over Europe and down in Africa. You can't just send a messenger to Alexandria. By the time he's there, it's 2 months later. Doesn't matter when the month started. You know, you get on a boat and go to Alexandria. It doesn't work that way. So there was a need seen, obviously, to have a calculated calendar. Back to the quote here. The problem with strictly lunar calendars is that there are approximately 12.4 months in every solar year, so a 12-month lunar calendar is about 11 days shorter than a solar year, and a 13-month calendar would be 19 days longer than a solar year. The months drift around the seasons on such a calendar, on a 12-month lunar calendar. The month of Nisan, which is supposed to occur in the spring, would occur 11 days earlier in the season every year, eventually occurring in the winter, the fall, the summer, and then back to the spring again. And if you did it on the 13-month calendar, it would go the other way. To compensate for this drift, the Jewish calendar uses a 12-month lunar calendar with an extra month occasionally added. Okay, I'm going to skip some of the quote here. In the 4th century, Hillel II established a fixed calendar based on mathematical and astronomical calculations. I will add that some people dispute that, but that most people accept it. This calendar, still in use, standardized the length of months and the addition of months over the course of a 19-year cycle, so that the lunar calendar realigns with the solar years. Adar 1 is added in the 3rd, 6th, 8th, 11th, 14th, 17th, and 19th years of the cycle. I'll skip some more. They call it a leap year when they add a month. We call it a leap year when we add a day. It's no different. It's a different calendar, but it's the same principle. You have to add something or subtract something to get it to work out. Okay. I am not going to deal in this message with the postponement rules. There are all kinds of rules for how the calendar is calculated and how it works. All right, that was one question. Does anybody know what time it is? Well, yes, we can know what time it is. But we have to make some assumptions. We have to figure some things out for ourselves. There's nothing in the Bible that says necessarily that an hour is, you know, 15 degrees of the turning of the earth or whatever. We just go with that, and they had hours back then too. But God does care that we keep his holy days. The second question was, does anybody really care? And I think God cares, and here's why. Psalm 133, verse 1. You know this one. I'm going to read it in the New American Standard. It might not read the same. Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. Almost exactly the same. Well, that's a good reason to have a calendar and agree on it so that we can keep the holy days together in unity. In 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 33, maybe a memory scripture for some of us in the past. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 33 says, "For God is not a God of confusion." I'm breaking into a thought. He's talking about the organization of church services and so forth, but I will apply the principle here. "God is not a God of confusion, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints." Doesn't do any good for us to have 15 different ways of doing something. That doesn't lead to peace or unity. The holy days are important. You know, does anybody really care? Well, yes. Colossians chapter 2. I'm going to turn to a couple of scriptures here that are used by many, many people to argue against the keeping of the holy days, and I'm going to show you why, to me, they're more proof that you should keep them and that they're worthwhile to keep. Colossians chapter 2 and verse 16 and 17. You're familiar with this scripture too. And I don't have time to go into the background of Colossians 2 and Gnosticism and all these types of things, but I think we can make the point here. "Therefore, no one is to act as your judge in regard to food or drink or in respect to a festival or new moon or a Sabbath day, things which are a mere shadow of what is to come, but the substance belongs to Christ." The holy days, as well as the new moons, and one of the holy days is a new moon, are shadows of what's to come. If we keep God's holy days, they teach us about what is going to come in the future, God's plan of salvation. We understand that. What is it? Psalm 111 and 110. "A good understanding have they with that do his commandments." You know, the principle is we have to do, we have to observe, and then we understand. So people would say that Colossians 2 is telling you don't bother about these holy days. I say it's exactly the opposite. Paul says, look, you're keeping them. There's good reason for keeping them because they're a shadow of what's coming. Don't let anybody judge you in food or drink. Why? Because food and drink are part of the feast days. They were feast days. And you had this Gnostic element. I told you I wasn't going to get into it, but I'll say a little bit. You know, you had people that touch not, taste not, handle not. People that were very ascetic in their values. And they thought this was being more righteous because God and spirit are right and flesh is bad. So we don't indulge the flesh in any kind of way. Now, a holy day is indulging the flesh. They had meat that they didn't normally have. They had fine meals that they didn't normally have the rest of the week or the rest of the year. And Paul says, don't let people judge you in that. Don't worry about it. God wants you to eat and drink. Have a good holy day. Now, I'd like to, for the final, I think it's the final scripture. Nah, it's not. The penultimate scripture. Galatians chapter 3. Another whole chapter that's used by many to say that we don't need to keep the law. I think it says exactly the opposite. I've spoken about this a little bit before. I'm going to start in verse 19. Galatians chapter 3 and verse 19. And Paul's been discussing the law. Make one point, first of all, and that Paul, many people say, well, Paul, we used to say, and you may believe this, and if you do, I'm not going to, I don't want to argue with you, but I'll just give you my perspective, and it's different. We used to say that Paul's talking about the ceremonial law and the moral or civil the moral law, and that they're different. I submit to you that Paul, when he talks about the law, he's using the word Torah, he was writing in Greek, but he's using the word for Torah, a Greek word. And he's talking about the law in the Torah. And that you can read this and as if it applies to the whole Torah, and it doesn't change the meaning. It changes it in a good way, perhaps. He's not arguing that they're different laws, I don't think. That's my conviction. So why the law, then? And in the New American Standard, it capitalizes law. Showing to them, anyway, those translators, they figure it means the Torah. Why the law then? It was added because of transgressions, having been ordained through angels by the agency of a mediator until the seed would come to whom the promise had been made. Now, a mediator is not for one party only, but wherefore God is only one. So I can't get into the whole argument here, but you'll see where I'm going with this. Is the law then contrary to the promises of God? May it never be. For if law had been given which was able to impart life, then righteousness would have indeed been based on law. But the Scripture has shut up everyone under sin, so that the promise by faith in Jesus Christ might be given to those who believe. Paul's point about the law is that it can't save you. There's no law that could save you. Or Christ wouldn't have been necessary, because you could keep the law and be saved. It was never intended to save. That's his argument, or his problem, if you want to say, with the law, is that his countrymen thought it could save them, thought it made them special. Paul said no. You know, they thought they had the law. Well, we're sons of Abraham. Jesus said, well, God can raise up stones to be sons of Abraham. You know, that standing that you think you have because you're children of Abraham and you have the Torah is not going to get you anywhere. You are the people of God, but it's not going to save you, put it that way. And I think that's what Paul's main point here. So verse 23. But before faith came, we were kept in custody under the law, being shut up to the faith that was later to be revealed. Paul's countrymen did not understand. Therefore, the law has become our tutor to lead us to Christ, to lead us to the Messiah. What an amazing thing. Paul's saying that the whole Torah, was given to lead people to Messiah. How many Jews in the Old Testament did it lead to Messiah? Not many. Maybe the prophets, and maybe they didn't even understand. They just wrote stuff down. So who's it written for? Who's it going to lead to Messiah? It didn't lead the Israelites to Messiah. It didn't lead Jesus' countrymen to the Messiah. And it didn't lead Paul's countrymen, for the most part. Led some of them by his lifetime. It's written for us. It's written for this time. To lead us to Messiah. Now, what do people say? I'm going to talk now, getting out of the quote here. People say, once you're led to Messiah, then you don't need it anymore. Get back to that in a minute. You're no longer under a tutor. But now the faith has come, we are no longer under a tutor. Or a schoolmaster, I think it says in King James. For you are all sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. For all of you who were baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free man, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. And if you belong to Christ, then you are Abraham's descendants, heirs according to the promise. Doesn't matter whether you're literally a blood relative of Abraham. You are spiritually an inheritor of the promise. Now, let's get back to the tutor. Just make sense out of this. Just think it through. As parents, those of us that are parents, we tutor, we're schoolmaster, you know, for our children, right? And we teach them all kinds of things, hopefully good things. Now, is the intention that once we get them to the point where they are able to live on their own, that they forget everything we ever taught them? Is that why we teach them? Is that why we're tutors, so that they can just throw it all away when they turn 18 or 21? Oh, that doesn't make any sense. How about if you're a teacher? Some of you just went back to school, right? Got some hard subjects. Teacher's teaching you math, science. Somebody's teaching Justin about the solar system. You know? Is that so that when Justin turns 18, he can forget everything he ever learned about the solar system? That's not relative anymore. Not doesn't relate to my life. I don't care. That doesn't make any sense. You don't learn things so that you can get to a point in your life where you don't need it anymore. I don't think Paul meant that, but many, many people think he does. That, you know, and you've probably seen the exposition before, that if you were a well-to-do family, you might have an intelligent, learned slave in your household, or somebody that you hired part-time or whatever, that would come and tutor your child and teach them the sciences and teach them the arts. Because maybe you didn't know, or you didn't have time, or you're rich enough, it doesn't matter, you just hire somebody else. And that's how people, sometimes they weren't even slaves. Sometimes they're just, you know, philosophers. How did they make a living? People hired them to teach their kids. Or the king would hire them to teach the prince or whatever. They were tutors. They were schoolmasters. They taught them all these things about how to live and about the arts and about whatever. That was things that were known. Is that so that when the prince becomes king, he forgets it all and throws it away? It doesn't make any sense at all. If the law... And it is. If the law is to lead us to Christ, that's its role. That's what it does. It's leading us to Christ. If it was done away on the cross, it's not leading anybody anywhere, is it? That doesn't make any sense to me, anyway. I hope I'm making some sense to you. Paul's problem with the law was how it was being used, that his countrymen were saying it could save them. Obeying the law could save them. He said, no, can't do that, never could. It's something that leads you to Christ. And it still does that. Why am I talking about that now? Because it's holy day time? Well, because that's what keeping the holy days do. Yes, they are a picture, they are a shadow of things to come. They show us the plan of salvation. They explain that to us. But every one of the holy days points to Messiah, and we rehearse those things every year. And there's salvation through only one name, and that's the Messiah's name. And that's what the holy days point us to every year. To say that they're done away, it doesn't make any sense. If they were done away at the cross, they never led anybody to Messiah. The whole law never led anybody to Messiah. It was a waste of time. It makes no sense to me at all. So, I don't see a need to split Paul's writings down into ceremonial law and this law and that law. He's talking about the law. And it has just as much meaning and use or more today than it did then. But we should get to the point where we realize it's not going to save us. But it does show us the path to go. And it's just as relevant now, or more so relevant now than it was then. So enjoy this fall festival season. Rejoice in unity. Be very appreciative. I encourage you to be appreciative of the fact that there are other people that have agreed. We have a consensus that we're going to follow this calendar. And that way we can keep the holy days on the same day. Makes perfect sense. And... if God sees fit to change that sometime in the future, where we're going to send somebody out and look for the new moon and spread it around the earth, that could happen. But it's not the way it is now. And when you see the sun and the moon and the stars, I encourage you to think of any number of psalms, but I'm going to turn to Psalm 8 and read Psalm 8. I don't want you to think of a little red ball and a big blue ball with some green writing on it. Here's what I'd rather have you think about. Psalm 8. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth, who have displayed your splendor above the heavens. From the mouths of infants and nursing babes, you have established strength because of your adversaries, to make the enemy and the revengeful cease. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon, and the stars which you have ordained, What is man that you take thought of him, and the son of man that you care for him? You have made him a little lower than God. You have crowned him with glory and with majesty. You make him to rule over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, and also the beasts of the field, the birds of the heaven and the fish of the sea, whatever passes through the paths of the sea. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. I think the fall, any holy days, but especially the fall holy days, so many of them in a short period of time, and some beautiful stars out last night. I couldn't sleep. I have some certain things going on in my work life right now that just had me awake from about 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So I go out and I look. Of course, Orion's up pretty high in the sky by then. It's really, really pretty last night. It wasn't cloudy like it was when I went to bed. And look up there, you know, and appreciate what God has done for us and appreciate the holy days that we can share with so many people in so many different locations around the earth. It's just wonderful to hear where everybody's going, all these different places. It's fun. And enjoy the Day of Atonement coming up. And if we don't see you then, enjoy your feast wherever you're headed this year.